It's actually quite the opposite. The moment we're surrendering, we're just moving from being self-determined to being God-determined. We're moving from being desire-led to being obedience-led. That's what surrendering means. It doesn't mean sitting still. It means just a shift in our orientation from where we are led from. One woman that is led in such a way that's going to share with us today is Juliette Berry. Can you make some noise for Juliette Berry? Juliette's going to share the word with us. It's an honor for me and Jacques, or how should I say that? Jacques and I. Renelle always corrects me. Jacques and I to release Juliette all the more into ministry. She's been the office manager for even before I was here. But even before she was the office manager at this church, keeping it all together, she's been a missionary and a church planter. She's lived lives before that most of you don't even know about. And she's a woman of incredible faith, whose life is not her own. In doing all that, she's a single mom of two children that she did not bear herself. While she works full-time and makes sure that the church actually works. I think Angus Bachan once said that he sensed God told him that it's not so much his words that will change people and they won't do what he says, but they will become who he is. If you receive someone, you become who they are. You don't become what their words tell you to be. And so for Juliette, I feel like she can stand up here and just say blah, 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 blah. And if you would be willing to receive, you would receive a lot. So we're looking forward to receiving from you, Juliette. Let us just pray for her. Father, I thank you for the blessing of Juliette. And I pray that you'd work mightily through her now in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you. I promise I went blah, blah, blah. I worked too hard to drop it like that. Thank you, band, and even Jock and Aubrey's word, it all, and France. I was very encouraged, as you can see the topic. It's a life of faith, so nobody knew what I was preaching on today except Alice. And I'm really excited to share with you this morning. Debbie asked me to share a little bit about my journey in the early days living in China, and so I'm going to jump right into that. This morning, I want to speak about faith and make it practical by giving you some examples from my life where I moved from a place of faith and saw the Lord move mightily. Who needs to hear that word this morning on faith? I've spoken to some of you hoping, planning, putting your faith out to join the Luxembourg mission coming soon. It is not a cheap mission. And I sensed this morning in worship to just put it out there that if any of you have that on your heart to sow into that, please do that. You can put that in the missions account, say Luxembourg Mission General, or if you want to support someone specific, you can ask Dear Beer. But that's really an incredible place to sow into. Many of you know I was blessed with a three-month sabbatical at the end of last year. I would highly recommend it if you ever are given that opportunity. Yes, France, we've been there. We were forever changed. And part of the sabbatical included a 38-day trip to China, Hong Kong, and the Philippines. To some, that sounds like a great holiday, the adventurous type perhaps, and to some, that may sound very daunting. I think I was somewhere in between. I was excited to go and see old friends again and very daunted by the fact that I had a lot of hoops to jump through to be able to take my son Joshua with me. So he's still currently in foster care. So to be able to take him overseas is a lot of paperwork. And by many miracles, I was able to get a passport for him and visa, and the day before we flew, I got permission to take him out the country. Isn't that fun? I also have a 19-year-old daughter who I had to leave home alone for that time, and she struggles with abandonment and anxiety, so that was also a big step of faith to be able to say she's going to be in God's hands, and the community house will be God's hands and feet when needed. I also did not have the finances for such a big trip, going to three countries. The Chinese church had given me a promise about a year ago and said, if you come to China, we'll pay for your flight. So they didn't say Hong Kong, Philippines, there and back with your son. They just said, we'll pay. And when we had that chat towards the time, once I decided, they said, we are going to try and cover as much as we can, meaning as much as my flight as possible. So I was a bit nervous, but luckily I was able to book the flights and just stepped out in faith, did the visas, and knew the permission was going to be granted on time, and off we went. The wait was not easy. It was not always fun. And then a friend of mine from the Philippines said to me, why don't you make the wait a faith journey as well? So list the things that you need from the Lord, the things that need to come through, and tick them off as you go along. And that really shifted my focus. Instead of just going, what if, I actually was able to list it and look back now and say, what a testimony. It was a big moment for me when we cleared customs. I cried. Joshua thought there was something wrong with mommy. Sometimes mommy leaks. And you can't explain all of that to an eight-year-old who's now nine. So just to be able to go through all those customs, every time I was nervous because any of the countries could say, why are you two together? This doesn't look like a realistic arrangement. And yet every time was a testimony to me to just give that little piece of paper and be praying. And just to sit next to Joshua on the plane as we took off our first international trip and think, his destiny, his legacy is going to be different because of this. And he can't understand the weight of that, but the legacy he comes from, to think he's at 8 years old, he has a passport, he's been to three, well, if you count the stopovers, to four international countries. And I'm just excited to see where the Lord's going to take him because his mind has been expanded so much. Now, some of you might be wondering, you don't know my past, although Deva shared a bit of that, why would I choose Asia? And I have to take you back to 2001 when I was in London doing a two-year working holiday, where some of you finished high school by then. Maybe not. That's okay. Some of us, yes. There are some aunties and uncles in the church, at least. I was in Every Nation Church in London, and I recommitted my life to the Lord, and then I did Alpha. Highly recommend it. We have an Alpha on the run all the time, on the go. And I was baptized, filled with the Spirit, and after a few months, my visa was due to run out, and I'd just come to have a personal relationship with the Lord. I think I was raised in a Christian family, but never actually had a personal relationship with the Lord, never went to the Lord for my decisions. I studied what I thought was a good idea, what my dad suggested. And so I thought, this time I need to actually ask the Lord what to do. But my plan was to go and work on a cruise ship or go and teach English in Japan, because that's where the money was in those days. So I thought, I'll make a bit of money, come back to South Africa after a few years, get married, settle down, have a few children. You know, it's a pretty average good plan for most people. However, God had other plans, and I'm so thankful for that. The Bible has a lot to say about our plans versus the Lord's plan. So we'll look at four of those verses to remind us. Proverbs 16:9 says, in their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. Proverbs 20:24, the Lord directs our steps, so why try to understand everything along the way? Psalm 31:14-15, but I trust in you, Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hands. Psalm 119:105, your word is a lamp to guide my feet and a light for my path. Which option would you choose, to go your way or to say, you are my God. My times are in your hands? I think these days with a lot of anxiety and a lot of uncertainty, I'm so thankful, and I don't know how people do life without Jesus, to be able to say, and yet, my hope is in you. I'll trust you. I'll still trust you. So one day there was an announcement in church while I was planning my plans for English teaching in China. There was one of the Every Nation America had planted a car. They'd started a training school, English training school in China for the purpose of internationals or foreigners, as they call us in Chinese, to get a visa through work. So I thought that sounded quite exciting. I thought China, Japan, same thing. Later found out they're really not friends. Not the same thing, but that's okay. It's still Asia. It's still same direction. So I went to the meeting, filled in my application form. Apparently, I was the only one who then applied. We were a lot in the meeting who were interested in it. But those days, I think, beautifully, I think I still am beautifully naive. We can call it childlike faith, because otherwise if the Lord explained everything to me, I'd run the other direction. So I went along, filled in my form, and I was accepted. And so then I thought, I better make sure this is of the Lord now that I'm accepted. So I spoke to my family. They said, it's a crazy idea, but you can do it. The missions director was actually going through a bit of a personal crisis in his life, and he was in Australia at the time, so I feel like I slipped through the gaps there a little bit. He just said, what does your family think? What do you think? I'm like, it's all good. He said, go for it. So it was getting real very fast, and then I thought, I think I need to get a word from the Lord. That's what they teach us. So the first weekend I fasted, and I heard nothing. So the second weekend, I realized that I'm supposed to pray and read the word when I fast. So I should probably do that. So the second weekend, I said, I'm not going to fast, Lord. I already did that. That didn't work. So this time, I'm going to read the Bible and pray. And by Sunday night, I want to see the words China in the Bible. And yes, that's what my friends did. And go or stay. So I said, I want a clear word. I'm not going to go halfway across the world without a clear word from you. I was trying to do it right. So yes, like you laughed, my friend said China is not in the Bible, and I very confidently, some call it arrogantly, but very confidently said, if the Lord wants me to go to China, he'll put it in the Bible. And he did. So by Sunday evening, I was getting a bit nervous because I'd given him a deadline of Sunday midnight. I'd gone to church. I expected a word from the Lord at church, some verse that said, go stay, maybe China somewhere. There was still nothing. So I came home and decided I'm going to have to read my Bible cover to cover and find the word. So opened the front cover of my study Bible, and there was this timeline of history. And China was mentioned about three times there. And then there was one, which I can't find. I have the same Bible now. And that one was stolen, but I also have the ESV study Bible. And I can't find that timeline in my current one. But it was there in that version. And I saw the Great Wall of China stood out for me. So I thought, okay, got China, we've got this wall thing, all right. Now, what about go or stay? I've got half what I required, what I requested, demanded from the Lord. So one of my housemates who I was annoyed with because he hadn't come to church that morning and he had sat at home and read the Bible and he said, God gave me Amos 4. And I'm like, that's nice for you. Awesome, I'm annoyed with you. I'm going to my room to read my Bible. So after, I think I started in Genesis because I had a lot to get through by midnight, I suddenly thought I may as well look at Amos 4. Maybe it was a word for me. So I read Amos 4, and when I got to verse 3, it said, you will each go straight out through the breaks in the wall. There I had my two words, go and wall, from China, Great Wall of China. So those of you who've done Bible school, you know that's not really the way to do it. Because if you read the rest of the verse, it says, and you will be cast out towards Hamon, declares the Lord. But luckily in my naivety, I just said, I got my word, and off I went. I didn't read it fully, which I do not recommend that way. But I really feel the Lord just smiled at me that day and said, my dear child, I honor you because you know no better. So I'm just going to help you out there. So a few weeks later, I found myself on a flight to Hong Kong and got out the airport, and I had to look for the go-go bus. So I had no language, no teaching experience, but I came out and saw a go-go bus and put all my luggage on it and went through the border into mainland China. And when I got a four-hour bus trip later, I was very surprised because I found China, especially south of China, to be very developed. I'd expected farmland and pigs, and underground church was in caves, literally. So I had no clue. I was wonderfully naive. And so I was quite surprised by all high-rise buildings and technology, even at that stage. When I got to the other end, there was a short little Chinese man waiting for me, and he was going to try and help me with my luggage, but I was a bit concerned that at his size, he may not cope. So I just said, no problem, strong South African woman, I'll take my backpack, thanks, and off we went. What followed was 6 months of learning a language and learning to smile while I was terrified on the inside. South of China has some very weird food. Went on many adventures, was handed things that I had to just kind of say, thank you, that's amazing, and swallow. I was also 23, unqualified, felt very young to be standing in a classroom with high school students. They were not much younger than me, but I had to pretend that I came with, I think I wore a suit for the first week to try and bring that authority. And then I went on a summer camp with, it was an English summer camp where students come, they were quite wealthy students actually that came on this camp, and we stayed in the village that was opposite of wealthy. Our beds were like sleeping on doors, mosquitoes, the bathrooms, let's just say we chose the bush rather, and our showers was a bucket with cold, icy cold water that we just had to throw over ourselves. So very tough for a spoilt 23-year-old girl, but we did it. And it was such a beautiful time because we got to share the love of Jesus with students who some had never heard, some had heard a little bit, but we gathered in groups and did songs and shared with them. And when I visited in December, I stayed with one of those students, and she's recently married and pregnant, and they're both in full-time ministry now. So that was such a joy to see the seed sown all those years ago in hardship at my age, at that time, feeling it was so hard. So I really encourage you, let's sow into the next generation. We just never know. Kids' church, it's the way. So my house, okay. So after 6 months in the south of China, a South African couple moved to the city in the north of the country. And the husband had had a dream. And in that dream, he had got a word, and he had looked up that word, and it was a city in the north of China. So he felt the Lord was calling him to go and plant a church there. So because I was in the south of China, and we had both come from Every Nation London, they called me and said, come and join us. So I applied for a job in the university, and off I went to join them. We started an English corner, where we invited students to the couple's house to practice their English. We did various games and activities. We did a quiz. We had to look up the answers in the Bible. And we even celebrated birthdays, which a lot of Chinese never do. Some of them also believe it was a day they caused their parents pain, their mom pain. So it's not a happy day. So we changed that. And one of the girls, the one who's actually cutting the cake, she's from a Tibetan background. And she, when she got saved, she actually said it was because we celebrated her birthday. For the first time, she saw she had value and worth. And we got the privilege of baptizing her, and she came to the Lord. So because of the love that we had for these students, I believe a lot of them felt something different. And a church was birthed in that same lounge where we had English corner. So we'd close all the windows, come up the stairs two by two quietly. In summer, imagine all the doors and windows closed and shoes come off in China. So that was a challenge on its own. And we would put on our MP3 player worship. Some of you may have heard of that. It's an archaic music device back in the day. The aunties and uncles will know it well. And so we would play. We had a mission team coming once to train our worship team, which was quite awkward because our worship team was an MP3 player that we pressed play, and they went through the whole thing explaining how we recruit for the worship team. And so we did it by faith, and we now have, of course, we have a worship team many years later. So we would do the worship, share a little word in the lounge, and then we'd go for a meal afterwards. We'd go two by two and meet at the restaurant, which is very similar to how we do small group nowadays. So that's church planting. We did baptisms in the bath. I remember a rather large man once. I had to just hold the shower thing in the bath. I baptize you in the name of Father, Son, the Holy Spirit, then turn it on, and we'd fill the bath, but he couldn't quite get under, so had to do it from above. He became the pastor later, so I think it worked. It's not about the water, right, or the bath. So many came to know the Lord at that stage, and they started, when they went back to their families, they got persecuted for their faith, but they started to stand strong and still follow Jesus. As a teacher, I also used every opportunity to share about Jesus, especially when it's Easter and Christmas, then it's a cultural thing that you're sharing. So we were able to be pretty open during that time. And I would challenge my students and give them controversial questions, things like abortion, what are their thoughts on that, what are alternatives? And it was very hard because they all had the same answer that they were raised to say. And so I realized that without the Spirit removing that veil first, it's very hard ground. But once that veil is removed, it was really easy. And they would come to the Lord quickly. So after 2 years in that second city, a dream started stirring my heart one day that maybe in 3 years' time, a little bit down the line, once I've raised some support and got the church nice and steady and sorted, I want to go to mission school in the Philippines for a year. And then a few weeks later, I mentioned it to the pastor at the time, and a few weeks later, he said, that's a great idea, go. It's starting in a few weeks' time. So once again, the Lord's timing was a bit faster than mine. I don't like change. So I think that's why he sent me, flung me out into the world, into different countries to be changed. And so a few weeks later, myself and the Tibetan girl in that cutting the cake, she and I were on a plane heading for Manila in the Philippines to go to attend mission school. We stayed in a house with 24 classmates, which was quite a dying to self community house on steroids. So we had, there was 9 girls on our floor, the males were on the other floor, 9 girls on our floor, and we had 2 bathrooms with a bucket and a scoop. That's how you washed. I've never before or never since had humidity on that level. Haven't been to Durban in a while, but that was pretty intense. It was tough, but some of my most fondest memories come out of that year, because it's in adversity, it's in those difficulties, it's in that discomfort that you grow, you stretched. And so that was just such an incredible time to learn about different cultures. If you left things on the table, then it was free for all, so people just ate your food. You didn't realize that that was the code. You labeled your eggs with your name, otherwise they disappeared. And I learned to serve, that how come every time I wake up first and the dishes are there dry and someone else just washes another dish and puts it on wet? So I decided I can serve the people in this house, and just, I'm the first up, I may as well pack it away every day and stop complaining and take out the rubbish and stop complaining. So we also had a few that were really, just really poor at that stage. They'd come from the villages in the Philippines, and so those of us who had a bit more, we would share with them and just saw that real community take place. Before I left for mission school, I returned to South Africa for a brief visit to raise financial support, because I needed to support myself while I was studying there. And I was really shocked to find that those who had very little gave a lot, and those who had a lot gave very little. I remember just some of the people that I expected that lived on a very nice wine farm or on fancy places sort of said, oh, not at this time, we're putting our money in other areas. And then someone who takes the train to work every morning and is struggling gave. And that was such a lesson to me as well. The Lord showed me the difference in that season between storing up treasures on earth or in heaven. Matthew 6 speaks of that. And the evidence of that is, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Matthew 6:21. So after mission school, I returned to the second city in China, where I had been and spent another year there. We were assisting the team to hand over to local leadership, to the Chinese pastor. And then it seemed time to go again, to move, because once they're established as a local community, very similar to India, when the foreign faces are there, you bring a risk to them. That's a security risk. So once they're raised up, it's time to move again. So after receiving various prophetic words, I remember sitting in a long queue to get a prophetic word, and the team that was prophesying said, I'm really sorry, all I've got is just go. And I said, yeah, I know. And all 3 or 4 of them said, I'm sorry, I've got nothing else. So had so many, I didn't want to leave that city. That was I'd given everything into those few years, those people, and so I had to seek the Lord, and with those prophetic words and speaking to leadership, I sensed it was time to move on, and they said, why not go to another city in the north where you can strengthen the team that's already there in place with their church planting. So I spent 5 years there studying Chinese for 2 of those years. So I met a lot of international classmates as well from Korea and Japan and all over. Some of them I still have relationships with now, so that was really special. Our communication language is Chinese, which is quite amusing, because we can't speak each other's languages. And I shared a flat with 2 Filipino girls during that time that were also from the Every Nation Church that we were planting. And it was also an incredible time where they got paid, or they got their support twice a month, and I got mine once a month at different times. So we just used whoever's money had come through, and then we used whoever's money came through next. So there was no, this is mine, or I got more, you got more. We just bought groceries together and bought toiletries together. And I really learned, Filipinos are a real hospitable nation. They just, they're even more than South Africans. I feel they're just like, I have nothing, but you can have it all. And so I really learned to just share into what is mine is yours. Hebrews 11:6 says, and without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. If it's impossible to please God without faith, surely we want to be able to live a life of faith, because as believers, we want to please God. In order to do that, we need to be sure of what faith is exactly, because nowadays we have different terminology for different things. I think back in the day, I thought faith was like this big thing that you must do and radical for Jesus and go out there and give up your career and just be in ministry. But often it's the mundane, day-to-day things where we actually are living a life of faith. If that's what God's called us to, then that's what we need to do. Hebrews 11 is often referred to as the Great Hall of Faith. It lists many men and women who demonstrated faith, yet not all lived to see the promises of God fulfilled in their lifetimes. I don't enjoy that verse so much. I would love to know there's a guarantee that my work has paid off and I see it all. And I'm one of the privileged people who's actually been back to see the fruit of a lot of the labor and the team that the team put in. A lot of us don't get to see that, and that's okay. We'll be in heaven one day. Faith is firstly in God, not in our strength or our plans or our ideas. It's in a God who is faithful and unchanging. So because of his character, we can put our faith in him and live a life of walking on water, so to speak, where we can't always be sure or have things all clearly planned out or guaranteed. But we can be certain he loves us and is for us and will lead and guide us as we walk together in step with him. So that just gives me so much comfort that when we step out, that he's with us. Our faith is in his character, and that cannot be, there's no hole in that. There's no gap. There's no gray. Faith is important because it is the means by which we have relationship with God. Ephesians 2:8 says, for by grace you have been saved through faith. So it took faith to become a Christian. It took faith to say, I believe in God. So we already have faith. He gives us that faith. And so that's the first step. And then we continue in faith for the rest of our lives. All right, so to make this practical, faith is believing that God is who he says he is and walking that out in our lives. Many of us know the story of the disciples in the boat when Jesus walked on the water towards them. And there's many preachings about that. Get out of the boat. Go for Jesus. Was Jesus upset? Was he actually just laughing? Did he rebuke Peter? Was he just gentle with him? And I want to use that analogy just because I think we're very familiar with that story and we can imagine sitting in that boat and Jesus calls us and how do we respond? So I wanted to mention three types of boats that also came out in the word with fear and control. So one of them is a boat of comfort. So this may be something that brings you comfort like a car. I was chatting to Lindsay and Andre in Portugal now, and they're like, we're public transport. We're using public transport. It's tough. Can't be on our phones. And sometimes that's hard for us. A nice house, a fixed salary, peaceful neighborhood, familiar group of friends. Can even be Netflix or being able to enjoy good wine or a braai every week. I know people who've looked for houses with a braai place because that is most important. Nothing wrong with any of these, but when the Lord asks you to give up any of them and you cannot for that reason, then it's become an idol. That's something that you then have to say, Lord, I can give even this up for you. For me, comfort was living in a nice, peaceful neighborhood in a big house in Tlaberga, having a full tummy, hot showers, friends who looked and thought just like me. I was never challenged. I was shocked when I went to the States and they asked me about how come our president is white. And I did not really know the answer. I was wonderfully naive and I just lived such a sheltered life and had to work through all of those things as I traveled and found out I'd lived in a beautiful disillusionment of reality. And so comfort for me was not having to use a squat toilet or having cold washes using a bucket or eating food that came with their eyes staring at me. I prefer my food without eyes. And yet, we seldom grow out of a place of comfort, do we? I think we all know that. Those of you who like hiking or trail running or mountain biking, missions, can agree with me. It's in those times of discomfort and pushing beyond ourselves that we actually if we look back, we've had the most fun because we've seen that the Lord comes through. We've seen what we're capable of. And I think that's where our greatest memories are made. Okay, the second boat is the boat of fear. These are usually where we have the what ifs that can lead to anxiety or paralyze us from moving forward for fear of what may or may not happen. Will the new job be better than this one? Will my parents be okay if I'm so far away? Will my family be able to survive on a fluctuating income? Will she say yes? What if I fail in the new position? What if my weaknesses are exposed? Can we afford a second child or a third child or a fourth child? What if God does not come through for me? And these are things we have to wrestle with. It's okay to think about it, to process it, and to think, oh, I have fear in this. Acknowledge it and work through it and say, but Lord, you are faithful. I met with my financial advisor the other day, and I forget each time before I meet her that a lot of the products are very fear-inducing. Speak about what if you lose your job and your kids need support and you don't have income? What if there's a fire in your house? What if, and I feel myself being gripped with fear each time and then being reminded that, okay, she is a believer and she knows by now because she looks at my income that I tithe and give a lot to the church and missions, and she's aware that my expenses exceed my income every time. And so she has tried to prompt me in the way of saving, and I do save and I have medical aid and some policies in place. Again, nothing wrong with those, but it's to really hear the Lord on those things and not do it out of a place of fear. And she has informed me that I will not be able to retire at 60 or 65. And I said, I'm well aware of that. I've never heard the Lord saying we can retire just because of an age. So I'm okay with that. She said, I must ask my company at what age I can retire. So that's the next step, you see. I might be around a while. All right, so we've got the boat of comfort, the boat of fear, and the last one I wanted to mention is the boat of control, which was mentioned in the words. How many of us like being told what to do and have no say in it? Not many of us. As a parent, I know my children certainly don't like being told what to do, and they're both of age where they can tell me that. There are consequences when they say that very loudly with a door slam, but they still do it. Modern society screams individuality and chance, the all too familiar, whatever makes you happy. I don't see that in the Bible. That is not there. That is a nice lie. Jesus calls us to lordship. Not freedom of speech or putting our happiness above others. We are not called to be depressed doormats either, but we are called to love others and to serve, not to do whatever we want to do, no matter the consequence. Romans 13:1 says, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. Do any of these boats resonate with you? I'm sure they certainly did with me at one time or the other. And some of them are daily. My comfort is challenged daily. And yet when we walk by faith and in obedience to God, none of the excuses or fears really matter anymore, because we're no more in control of our lives today. We're sitting here right now, a relatively safe environment, relatively cool, or if you're in a stormy sea in the middle of the ocean, we're no more safe. We're no more in control of our lives. And Proverbs 19:21 says, many are the plans in a person's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails. And ultimately, as believers, we want the Lord's purpose to prevail, as it's of eternal value rather than temporary pleasure or glory. And that is what I keep reminding myself when I get frustrated and feel, is it really worth it? And then I just remember, in light of eternity, we are going to be here for a fraction of time. We're going to blink our eyes and we'll be in eternity and look back and think, goodness gracious, what was I complaining about? Was it that bad? Fear reveals a lack of trust in an almighty God who holds creation in his hands. And I'm preaching to myself right now as we humans, so we tend to easily get wrapped up in the things of the world, the fears, the things in our face that we see every day. I'm challenged often by my family and by their struggles and have to remind myself that, Lord, you've given me everything I need. As a single mom, I get quite panicky at times. I had two panic attacks in my life, and those were both after my children came, and I realized that, oh, I actually don't know what I'm doing. I need help. I'm overwhelmed, and have had to learn that if you don't give it to the Lord, you're supposed to be overwhelmed if you're doing it in your own strength. And so in all these things, where God directs us to step out, maybe he asks you to give something or sell something or move or resign or start doing something we've avoided for years or stop doing something we've been doing for years. And we choose not to do it for whatever reason, we're being disobedient. That's the truth. That's hard. Doesn't mean it's easy to give up something or to give away something or to receive something, but that is the truth. And we'll struggle to grow in our intimacy with the Lord if we don't live in obedience to him. So let's quickly recap what the word says about faith. In Hebrews 11:1, it says, "Now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see." What is something you've been running from or planning to get to when you have enough time, enough money, enough kids, resources, a bigger house, higher qualification? If I waited until I was qualified enough, I would never have left PE. I was very comfortable. I was very confident. Thought I knew everything about everything. I was 20, so of course I did. And I feel the Lord just had to throw me out and say, I've got to do some shaking. I've got to do some molding. And sometimes where we're sitting in a very comfortable place, it's very hard for us to change. God is not man that he should lie or confuse or deceive us. His plans are for our good. And that's the good news. As scary as it can be to step out in faith, as scary as it can be to give away that thing you've been holding on to that you know the Lord's told you to give away or to bless someone with or to change jobs, his plans are for good. So when it is him, we can give it away joyfully because we can wait with open hands. Now that's empty. We're ready to receive. He's a loving father, so we don't have to fear. Ask him to show you which way to go, then listen. That is the most important part, is that we make sure that it's of him. We all have good ideas. We all feel we hear the Lord at certain times, and that's why we have small groups, accountability, people to pray with us so that we make sure. Debbie often says when we're sending people, we don't just send people who say, I'm going here. He sits with them and says, how do you know you're called there? What has the Lord said to you? And then we can send you with joy because we know you've heard the Lord. So I'm going to leave you with two discussion questions, and we'll have a time of prayer. If this has stirred your heart where you feel there's something you've been holding on to that you need to let go of or something you need a change in, and you're like, I need someone to pray with me on this. This is too hard. We're going to have some people at the back there to pray with you. And I want you to really contend for these things in worship as well and just say, Lord, this is hard. It's too hard for me. But I want to be able to just put out my hands and receive from you. And he just asks us for how much faith? Mustard seed. It's tiny. And that's the first step. It's just, I think we just stand up. I mean, Peter said, Lord, if it is you, call me. He didn't just say, oh, there's Jesus, I knew it, and off he went. He said, Lord, if it is you, and we can say, Lord, is it you? Because we don't want to be out there on the stormy seas, and Jesus is not there. He's always with us, but we want to make sure that it's of him. But don't get paralyzed in the waiting for him. Pray with people, ask people to confirm with you. All right, so the two discussion questions, you're welcome to share with the people around you, or you can, if you want to receive prayer, or just sit with it, if it's very personal, we can, which boat do you think you're in at this stage of your life? Is it control, fear, comfort? And what's one step you can commit to doing today to get out of that boat? It doesn't have to be big, it can be, I'm going to get an accountability partner, I'm going to get a prayer partner, I'm going to give away, I'm going to start tithing, whatever that little step is that you feel it's the Lord has highlighted for you today. Worship team, if we can worship, and have prayer team at the back as well.
Thank you, Juliet. You guys can sit or stand and respond on your own, but I do want to ask that if there's something that you want to commit to, repent of, that you do that you do go pray with someone. And I also want you us to just realize, just want to confirm, did you know what Juliet's going to preach about? We did not know what Juliet's going to preach about. So the fact that the words that came before and was exactly the same as this message just means that it is God who speaks to us, and we should just receive it as that. Just say, wow, God, what are you doing? And how can I respond to that? Let's do that.
Storm surrounding me, let it break.